Today, I'm first going to give you an update for CCA, and then we'll go into the message for today. And let's start with this. The Lord is mighty. He is mighty. Yeah, we had several challenges over the course of last year that tested our ability to trust in His faithfulness. But I am here today to tell you that He is faithful, and He will always be faithful. He has given me personally a Psalm 23:3 kind of summer, where the psalmist David tells us that the Lord restores our souls. And I am so excited. I've never looked forward to a school year like I have am looking forward to this school year. He's given me a renewed spirit and determination that Mike can tell you is nothing short of a miracle. That's a long story I'm not going to go into, but he just reminded me. I am going to go into it because I said it. Mike and I were praying about what to do because we both knew the year was challenging. And God answered our prayer miraculously in a matter of days. He is faithful. He is faithful. And He knows our hurts and our weaknesses. We've had a lot of changes this summer that are exciting. We are doing an online tuition payment service, which I personally love because it makes my life easier. We're also doing online uniform ordering, which, again, makes my life easier, so I'm selfish. I like that. And we're also switching to becoming a BECA curriculum-based school. When I started this school, I wanted to give, and you teachers can probably relate to this, as an administrator, I wanted to give my teachers a budget and let them do whatever they wanted to do as far as curriculum and spending their money on their classroom. Well, over the course of years, I've discovered that that's a decision that teachers don't really want to take the time to make. They want to do their job. It's hard enough to show up with a lesson plan ready to go, let alone do all the research involved with picking a curriculum. So we have made the decision as a staff to become mostly a BECA-based curriculum, which is they're a classical curriculum system, and I'm excited, again, for me, because it makes it easier for me to track what all of our students are doing. This summer, we've also decided to pursue accreditation through the Association of Christian Teachers in Schools, ACTS. So Sue and I are facing some interesting decisions going forward with pursuing accreditation, but pretty exciting stuff, right? And that's not it. There's a lot more. One of the challenges we faced last year was running out of room again, praise God, and this summer, the Booster Club bought us this modular that's right out here. And over the course of the last several weeks, we've had new floor put in, new roof put on, new paint put on, of course, a classroom set up, a library moved out there, a fence built so our students could have access to the building, and another classroom remodeled for an elementary class. There's more. Oh, we had new computers given. We had somebody give us 30 new laptops, so all of our students are going to have access to laptops this year, which is exciting. They're getting set up to use, and of course, if you come around this facility this afternoon or tomorrow, you'll probably see some teachers running around finishing up their classrooms. I know you'll see me running around finishing up some things. And this is probably the big announcement. Right now, we are at capacity and serving 113 students this year. Praise God. And when the Lord called me to this ministry, that was one of the aspects of this ministry, was to serve more families and students. At our old facility, we capped out at about 55 students. And here, it's been overwhelming to watch what in 3 short years, going on to our 4th year, what the Lord has done here. I am constantly feel like I'm just riding the crest of what the Lord is doing here. It's amazing. And when I first began this ministry, I had this kind of dream that I would be like the Jason in Acts. The Jason in Acts was accused of this horrible crime. He was accused of turning the world upside down for Jesus. And I would love to be accused of that crime. That would be awesome. But as I've grown and matured a little bit, not much, just a little, I've realized that the greater calling is for the Lord to use the ministry of me, the ministry of CCA, the ministry of Calvary Chapel, the ministry of you, to see our young people turn the world upside down for Jesus Christ. The Bible is full of young people that have been used to build the kingdom of Christ. And when we talk about building, Psalm 127 is what we're going to start out with today. If you'd like to turn there, Psalm 127. And if you'd stand with me, please, if you're able, we will read Psalm 127. Bill, you don't have to. All right, Psalm 127. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for God gives his beloved sleep. Behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but shall speak with their enemies in the gate. You may be seated. Thank you. Just really quick before we go into the next part, that last part of Psalm 127 talks about the gate. For those of you that when the Bible talks about the gate, that's where the community would gather to make important decisions, legal decisions, and things like that. So what the psalmist is saying there is that children dedicated to the Lord can stand in those kinds of situations and never be ashamed. And you can never be ashamed of those kind of children. So he calls children an arrow. And I was thinking of this. What does it take to make just one arrow? It takes wood, right? Or fiberglass, whatever they use nowadays. Metal, feathers or plastic. And of course, it takes somebody to know how to make it. And glue. Scott McGann reminded me, lots of glue. And what does it take to shoot an arrow? Just having an arrow doesn't do a whole lot, unless you're really talented. It takes a bow, right? And what does it take to make a bow? A bowyer, wood, fiberglass, pulleys, string, whatever it is to make a bow. And then the quiver itself, of course, is a whole other part of the ensemble. And so when we think of children as arrows, they need more than just their parents. Of course, parents are the primary aimers and shooters. But they need this whole support system around them as they grow. And we are going to look at some of our young heroes from the scriptures. And then we are going to look at some of their support system. So we are going to start with Joseph. And most of you are going to be familiar with these characters. I'm going to give you a brief reminder of what they did and what they experienced, and hopefully with some things you haven't heard. And then we'll go into and talk about their support staff. Joseph was sold into slavery by his brothers because they were jealous of him. And he was made the chief slave in a high-ranking official's house in Egypt. And while he was there serving as a chief slave, still a slave, but the chief slave, his master's wife wanted him in a very bad way. And the scriptures tell us that she talked to Joseph about committing adultery day after day. And I got to thinking about us, and I don't know about you, but I have some sins that creep into my life, it seems like, day after day. And I hope Joseph will encourage you as much as he encouraged me with what he did. One day, she was talking to him, and she grabbed his garment, and he ran, and part of his garment stayed there with her. And the scriptures tell us that she left it next to her until her husband came home. Joseph didn't rise to be chief slave because he was a dummy. He knew what was going to happen when his master came home. So Joseph had time to consider his decision. He had time to say, you know, I could go back to her and we could do this thing and then I would stay out of jail. But he didn't. He chose to say yes to the Lord and no to adultery. And when I think about us and our struggles with the day-to-day combat we have with sin, I want to remind you that Joseph was a slave and then a prisoner for 13 years before the Lord accomplished his will in Joseph's life and made him the second most powerful man in the world. 13 years of waiting on the Lord. And some of you know how hard that is. But Joseph is a reminder to you of how faithful God is. When Joseph faced this decision to either go into prison or just commit one not so little sin, he was 17 years old. Our next hero is Miriam. Moses' sister Miriam, you guys have all heard the story about little baby Moses getting put into the Nile in the basket and getting floated down to the princess's bathing party and becoming part of the royal household. And when the cartoons show us Miriam, they kind of show her joyfully hopping down the Nile to guide her baby brother to Pharaoh's daughter. But I want you to consider that the Pharaoh's daughter and this group of royalty, for months at least, we don't know the time frame, but at least months, has been giving partial birth abortions, death by drowning, or death by crocodiles to little boys just like Miriam's brother for months. Miriam was a slave approaching these masters who were killing her people. And she weaved her way through that audience of royalty and servants, and she went to this master of masters, the Pharaoh's daughter, and said, "Excuse me, but if you're not going to kill that boy, I know somebody who can feed him." She was 11 years old. Incredibly brave. Kind of a sidebar, but kind of not. How many of you, when you were growing up, had parents give you a chore and you did it partway or not at all? Miriam had that choice here. She could have followed Moses partway, saw that he was going to get rescued, and then went home. But she didn't. She was brave. She went before those people, and not only did she save her brother, she got her mom a job in the palace to take care and help raise her son. Miriam's brother, but her son. What a brave little 11-year-old. Samuel is our next hero. Now, Samuel had a really weird upbringing. Samuel's mom, Hannah, was so desperate to have a child that she was at the temple praying, and the priest Eli, that's Eli there, Eli came out and accused her of being drunk because she was praying without speaking. And he said, "Go home, woman, you're drunk." And she said, "No, I'm not. I just want a kid so bad." And she made a deal. She said, "Okay, God, if you give me a boy, I will give him to the temple to serve." And God listened, and he said, "Okay." And she had this boy, Samuel, and as soon as Samuel was weaned, she took him to live with Eli at the temple. And Samuel, this little boy, I'd like to read about it. Oh, that reminds me. Today we're going to be doing a lot of hopping around through the scriptures. We're not going to stay in one passage like we normally do. So if you have a Bible and want to go with me, we will be going to 1 Samuel chapter 3. 1 Samuel chapter 3. And in 1 Samuel chapter 3, we read this. "Now the boy Samuel was ministering to the Lord before Eli, and word from the Lord was rare in those days, and visions were infrequent. And it happened at that time as Eli was lying down in his place, now his eyesight had begun to grow dim, and he could not see well, and the lamp of God had not yet gone out." And that's the lamp that was in the temple when they were in there. And Samuel was lying down in the temple of the Lord where the ark of God was. In verse 4, and then the Lord called Samuel, and Samuel said, here I am. Then Samuel ran to Eli, and he said, here I am, for you called me. And Eli said, I did not call you. Go lie down again. So Samuel went and he laid down, and the Lord called again, Samuel. So Samuel arose, and he went back to Eli, and he said, here I am, for you called me. And Eli answered, I did not call my son. Go lie down. Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, nor had the word of the Lord yet been revealed to him. So the Lord called Samuel again for the third time. And he arose and went to Eli, and he said, here I am, because you called me. And Eli discerned that the Lord was calling the boy, and Eli said, go and lie down. And it shall be, if he calls you, that you shall say, speak, Lord, for your servant is listening. So Samuel went and he laid down. And the Lord came and he stood and he called Samuel again, Samuel, Samuel. And Samuel said, speak, for your servant is listening. And from this event of saying yes to the Lord's call, Samuel went on to become, in my opinion, the baddest judge and prophet to ever walk the face of the earth. He was amazing. He led armies into battle. He crowned kings. He stood up to kings. He was not afraid of anybody. He loved Israel so deeply that when he went to them and they chose a king over God, that he got frustrated, but he never left them. This was a man that was so tough that whole communities were afraid of him. I mean, he's something you should read about, Samuel. He was amazing. And Samuel also left a heritage that went on for generations after he was dead. He started a school of prophets that affected Israel for decades after Samuel's death. When he said, speak, Lord, your servant is listening, Samuel was about 12 years old. Now, David, we've all heard of King David and his fight with Goliath. David, the boy who started by delivering lunch to his brothers and ended up delivering Israel from the Philistines. This David, I was trying to figure out how to communicate to you the size of Goliath within the context of where we are sitting today. And that cross is actually probably about the same size as Goliath would be, that height and that width of musculature to handle that height. And David was probably about the perfect height, about 5'6", you know. And could you imagine with a sling facing somebody that big? If any of you have ever been around our basketball stars, or Roger, then you know how those guys that are hitting about 7 foot, they are huge. They are gigantic. And to face somebody 3 foot taller than that, that's overwhelming. And I love David, and my favorite passage about David is found also in 1 Samuel. And if you'd like to turn there, chapter 17. And if I was a little bit braver, I would probably be a little bit more dramatic with this scene, but it is fascinating to think about this. A valley with these two armies lined up facing each other. And every day, this gigantic man comes out and says, you Hebrews are nothing but a bunch of wimps. Your mom wears cowboy boots or combat boots. Or my God Dagon will destroy your God Yahweh. Day after day, challenging these Hebrews to come out and fight. And I could just see a couple of Hebrews maybe sneaking out a few feet and then Goliath going at them and they run back to the lines. And then we have David bringing his brothers lunch, and he hears this smack talk, and he goes, who is this guy that's insulting the living God? And what a brave young man. And my favorite passage about David is in 1 Samuel 17, starting with verse 41. Then Goliath came on, and he approached David with his shield bearer in front of him. And when the Philistine looked at David, he disdained David because David was but a youth and ruddy with a handsome appearance. And the Philistine said to David, am I a dog to come at me with sticks? And the Philistine cursed David by the gods of the Philistines. And the Philistine also said to David, bring it. I'm going to feed you to the birds. I'm going to give your bones to the jackals. And David's response, it's amazing. It's amazing. And David said, you come to me with a sword and a spear and a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the living God of Israel, whom you have taunted. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hands, and I will strike you down and remove your head from you, and I will give the dead bodies of the Philistines to the birds and the jackals, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. And the, amen, yeah. That all this assembly may know that the Lord does not deliver by spear or by sword, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands. Praise God. And sometimes I wish I could do it with sword and spear, but I can't. It's by Yahweh's power alone that we have a chance in this place. And God used this young man, this willing tool, to win the greatest single one-on-one combat, in my opinion, in history. And you guys know the rest of the story. David knocked Goliath down with his sling, slew him with his sling, and then finished the job. We'll go into that detail. David, we're not quite sure how old he was at this time. Most people think he's about 15, 16 years old. Josiah is the next hero we're going to talk about. King Josiah. I was debating what graphic to use. I chose this one because Josiah was 8 years old when he was crowned king. And Josiah is another one of my favorites. In case you haven't noticed, these are all my favorites. I love all these stories. Josiah, well, let's just turn there and read. It's in 2 Chronicles. Notice I got it in order, so we can just turn the pages. See? Chapter 34, we're told this about Josiah. We'll start with verse 1. 2 Chronicles 34. You'll see why he's one of my favorites in a second. Verse 1. Josiah was 8 years old when he became king, and he reigned 31 years in Jerusalem. He did right in the sight of the Lord and walked in the ways of his father David and did not turn either to the right or to the left. For in the 8th year of his reign, while he was still a youth, so he's 16, guys, 16 years old, he gave his life to the Lord. He began to seek the God of his father David. And in the 12th year, so now he's 20, still pretty young, 20 years old, he began to purge Judah and Jerusalem of the high places, the Asherim, the carved images, and the molten images. Verse 4, they tore down the altars of the Baals in his presence, and the incense altars that were high above them he chopped down. That was another graphic I was going to pick, was of King Josiah whacking at all these idols, but I like that one better. Also the Asherim, the carved images, and the molten images he broke into pieces and ground to powder and scattered it on the graves of those who had sacrificed to them. Then he burned the bones of the priests on their altars and purged Judah and Jerusalem in the cities of Manasseh, Ephraim, Simeon, even as far as Naphtali in their surrounding ruins. He also tore down the altars and beat the Asherim and the carved images into powder and chopped down all the incense altars throughout the land of Israel. Then he returned to Jerusalem. So I do not know why nobody has made a movie out of this guy, because this is some of the most awesome stuff in the story of all the kings. He was amazing. I know we read it and it sounds kind of la la la, but we're talking about axes flashing, fires burning, stuff being ground up, stones being destroyed, whole communities in an uproar because this king is coming in and changing how they worship. And it's the priest trying to run away from him. Doesn't sound like very many got away from him. We are talking about, this was an extremely violent purge of Judah and Jerusalem of idol worship. 20 years old, gave his life to the Lord at 16. 4 years later, he is changing a nation because he said yes to the Lord. 8, 16, and 20, he said yes to the Lord's calling in his life. My favorite verse is in 2 Kings about Josiah. Just one verse, so I'm just going to read it to you. Before him, there was no king like him who turned to the Lord with all his heart, with all his soul, and with all his might, according to all the law of Moses, nor did any king like him arise after him. And I don't know about you guys, but it's time we had some leaders in our country that were like this. And you guys play a big part in that. But we're not there yet. We have some more heroes to talk about. Another of my favorites, Jeremiah. Jeremiah, we hear about Jeremiah. We hear the verses like, I know the plans I have made for you and I have a future for you. We hear this verse in Jeremiah 1:1. Before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. We've heard that verse, right? We're going to go ahead and finish out that passage. I have appointed you as a prophet to the nations. And then Jeremiah said, alas, Lord God, behold, I do not know how to speak because I am a youth. And every speech class that I've ever taught says that same thing to me. I don't get that. But the Lord said to me, do not say I am a youth, because everywhere I send you, you shall go. And all that I command you, you will speak. Do not be afraid of them, for I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord. Then the Lord stretched out his hand and he touched my mouth. And the Lord said to me, behold, I have put my words in your mouth. I have appointed you this day over nations and over the kingdoms to pluck up and to break down, to destroy and to overthrow, to build and to plant. And most of us have probably heard at least part of that chunk of scripture a time or two in our life. What we don't hear is in chapter 2, verse 17. God says this, now gird up your loins and arise. Gird up your loins means get ready to run or fight. Get ready for action. Gird up your loins and arise and speak to them all which I command you. Do not be dismayed before them, or I will dismay you before them. Now behold, I have made you today as a fortified city and as a pillar of iron and as walls of bronze against the whole land, to the kings of Judah, to its princes, and to its priests and the people of the land. They will fight against you, but they will not overcome you, for I am with you to deliver you, declares the Lord. So in other words, God just told Jeremiah, everybody will be against you. Your friends, your family, your government, your priest, the whole land, you will be alone. 17-year-old boy against the nation. A 17-year-old boy against a nation. What faith? He said yes when the Lord called in his life. Our last hero we're going to talk about is one of my favorites, Esther. Esther, you guys all have heard, you know, the king of Persia got mad at his wife. In VeggieTales, she wouldn't make him a sandwich, so he kicked her out. And they did a beauty contest across the land of Persia, which was the whole known world, by the way. We're talking to a lot of people. And Esther won the beauty contest. Yay, lucky Esther. This lucky girl got married to a guy who could kill her if she came before him unannounced. That's how lucky Esther was. And we've all heard that part. And we see that this young lady became embroiled in one of the greatest political cases of political intrigue in the history of the world. There was this guy named Haman, and Esther's was adopted. She was adopted by her uncle, Mordecai, and her uncle Mordecai insulted this guy named Haman, and Haman was a bigwig in the government. And Haman said, okay, well, if you're going to disrespect me, then I'm going to kill you and everybody that carries the name Jew. And Haman went on to start a series of programs that was going to kill Esther, Mordecai, and everybody else in the known world named Jew. And he, make sure I'm not forgetting something. In Esther 3:13, we see the results of his programs. And this is just one verse. And this is what happened from Haman's hatred of the Jews. Letters were sent by couriers to all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all the Jews, both young and old, women and children, in one day. The 13th day of the 12th month, which is in the month Adar, and to seize their possessions as plunder. So could you imagine being married to the king who just signed this law to kill all of your people? Esther stood up to the equivalent of our CIA, NSA, and FBI all rolled into one in this man named Haman. She stood up to a man who bankrolled this program out of his own money to the tune of over $230 million. And her uncle found a way to stop the world's most powerful government to save a people and to change the world, change history. That event in Persia changed history. She was chosen by men because of her beauty. But she was chosen by God because of her courage. Esther was about 14 years old when she stood up and said no to fear and yes to the Lord's call in her life. And none of these young people woke up one day and said, well, you know, I guess it's my day to change the world for the Lord. They're just like us, trying to get through life, understand God. Why is God doing this? Why is this happening? And the Lord called, and they just said yes. They walked in the paths that he set before them. And the Bible doesn't expressly mention this, but I will guarantee you that none of those heroes we just talked about said yes to the Lord without a network of adults and groups of adults around them to support them, to help them grow. For Joseph, we know all about Jacob. You know, the guy whose name got changed to Israel, that was Joseph's dad. We know that Jacob raised Joseph to have an intimate relationship with the Lord. Miriam, the parents of Miriam and Moses and Aaron stood up to the world power government and chose God's ways over the ways of government. And Miriam had this great example of female leadership in her community where these two midwives, Shapira and Puah, were told to give partial birth abortions to the Hebrew babies. And they said no, they didn't do it. They said no, and Miriam got to watch the Lord bless these female leaders in her community stand up to the government and have them for her example. You know, I kind of chuckle when I hear people say, oh, that Bible, it's just an old book of folk tales written by men for men. It's all patriarchal in nature. And my response is, well, you haven't read the Bible then, because there are some amazing, powerful female leaders all throughout the scriptures. And Miriam had the blessing of having two of those in her life to be that network of adults around her. Samuel had his mom, Hannah, who kept her word, showed her son how real God is by keeping that word. Moms, could you imagine? As soon as you wean your kid, you're going to give him over to the temple? That is a faithful woman. She was incredibly brave. And then Eli did a horrible job with his own kid, his own sons, but he raised Samuel to say, speak, Lord, your servant is listening. We look at David. David's network of adults started before he was a glimmer in his dad's eye. Boaz, the guy that married Ruth in the Bible, was David's great-grandpa. And God started building up that family three generations for David to achieve his purpose. That's a lot of building up of a network of adults around a young man. Josiah had a priest named Hilkah, Shaphan, Abdon, a whole bunch of priests and prophets, and again, a prophetess named Huldah. Huldah's a good name. I'd love to see, you know, one of you name your daughters Huldah. But he had all of these people around him as a young man, and what happened in Josiah's time, one of the really, you guys should read about Josiah. He was amazing. But one of the amazing things that happened was he ordered the temple to be cleaned out. They had been putting idols and all kinds of weird stuff in the temple. And he ordered the temple to be cleaned out, and they found the books of the law. The books of the law had been lost. I don't know what they were doing as a nation. And the priest that brought those to Josiah, was Hilkah. And Hilkah just happened to be the dad of one of our other heroes today, Jeremiah. And I got to looking at this when I was researching this. Jeremiah and Josiah were about the same age. serving for the same purpose, serving the Lord. And I cannot imagine how heartbroken Jeremiah had to have been to get these prophecies from the Lord about Israel and Judah's destruction, knowing that his friend Josiah was not going to be around for long. Josiah died in a battle at a fairly young age. And it just broke my heart to think about Jeremiah getting that word from the Lord. And not only did Jeremiah have this love, this burden for Israel that was so strong and so powerful that he actually went and died with them in Egypt. When he told them, don't go to Egypt, you're going to die there. And they went to Egypt, and he loved them so much that he went with them. I cannot imagine how broken his heart was when he saw what was going to happen to his friend Josiah. And then Esther had an uncle who adopted her and guided her to, again, save a people and change the world. Here at Calvary Chapel, all of the various ministries that we do, the daycare, the academy, and all the stuff that the church does, we truly believe that we are acting as God's instruments in being a network of adults around these young people to give them a chance, a greater chance, to say yes to the Lord. You guys know the future doesn't lie in us. It lies in them. And you guys know the future has got to change. Or Jesus come back now, right? And even then, he needs to raise up a generation of strong leaders. Because I'll guarantee you the enemy is raising up a generation of strong leaders right now. We need to raise up a generation of strong leaders. And I have the unique blessing of having access to some students at CCA. And I know there's a ton of students out there from other schools and homeschool that I could have asked to be up here, but frankly, I just didn't have time. I have access to these. And they're going to talk to you a little bit about what you are doing as a network of adults around one of Calvary Chapel's ministries, the Academy. And I would like to introduce the first of them to you. These two young ladies have been, oh man, known them since preschool. They're getting ready to graduate. So they're the first group of graduates we've had from preschool all the way through. And I've known them, you know, for a lot of time. And they're more than just students to me. They're my friends. And I'm so honored to have them here today to share with you what the Lord has done through the ministry of Calvary Christian Academy. Please welcome our first speaker, Amanda Howard.
Good morning. Calvary Christian Academy is not only a school, but is a place where I can go and learn more about my God as I receive my formal education. As Coach said, I have been attending CCA, formerly EVCS, since kindergarten. I am now 17 years old and a senior. Being a part of the school is a huge blessing to me. The staff at CCA is a group of caring, loving, and patient men and women of God. They are an example of forgiveness, mercy, love, and kindness. They do not work for a monetary paycheck. They work for their love for us students. I can't tell you how many times a teacher has given up their lunch for me or stayed after school to help me with a paper, a project, or just a silly math problem that I couldn't understand. But their day does not end when the bell rings at 4 o'clock. They often take home papers and grade them, or they stay and plan the next day's lesson. CCA provides two sports for junior high and high school students, flag football and volleyball. I've had the amazing opportunity to be a part of that volleyball team for 8 years. Being a part of the team has gave me a sense of camaraderie. The volleyball and football team was blessed 2 years ago with a booster club that was started just by volunteers. The booster club has been an answer to the school's prayers. They have been able to raise funds to help with uniforms, gym rentals, traveling expenses, or just needed equipment. The Booster Club not only helps with the sports at the school, but also with the academics. They recently purchased a trailer that was much needed for lots of room because we were running out of room for classrooms. This group has been a godsend to my school. In Hebrews 12:1, it says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles. And let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us." As I won the race marked out for me, I am thankful for the preparation and the tools given to me by the staff at CCA. Being surrounded by all these wonderful students and staff gives me courage to stay strong in my faith and challenges me to say yes to the Lord more and more. In closing, I would like to share another verse with you, Jeremiah 17:7. "But blessed is the one who trusts in the Lord, whose confidence is in him." When the school was combining with Calvary Chapel, I wasn't so happy about it. I hardened my heart towards God, towards the school, and towards Coach. But through this transformation, God has showed me that change is good and that his plans are bigger than mine. And knowing that, it gives me confidence to answer the Lord's calling with, "Speak, Lord, for your servant is listening." Thank you.
Our next speaker, please welcome Emily Potts.
Hi, everyone. I've also been going to the school since kindergarten, along with Amanda. And one of the biggest things that I've been able to be a part of with the school has been volleyball. It has made one of the biggest impacts in my life, and I absolutely love it. It's taught me so many things that have been awesome in volleyball, but have also carried over into life, like perseverance, leadership skills, and working hard to reach my goals. My coaches have been absolutely amazing in coaching me on the court, but also in life with anything off the court that I need help with. Our motto is, "Our best, his glory," which is absolutely good for me because I'm one of those people that is super competitive and usually will do whatever it takes to win, which takes my mind off God, and I get focused on myself and whatever I need to do to win. And my team is so good about keeping me and keeping everyone out there focused on God and keeping our hearts where they need to be. And remembering that even when the game is tough and it's close and it's hard, that's not our only goal. Our goal is to please God and to show everyone in the crowd him. And this motto also carries over into our classroom. We're always pushed by all of our teachers to do our best and work as hard as we can. And that's a lot of what I love about the school, but one of the biggest things is something that was really, really shown to me a few months ago. In March, I was running out to my mom's car in the driveway, and I slipped and fell. I shattered the inside of my ankle, broke my leg, and dislocated, did a ton of damage, and it was probably one of the scariest things that's ever happened to me. I was facing surgery. I didn't know if I was going to be able to play my senior season of volleyball, and I was just scared. I had never had surgery before, anything like that. And within hours of breaking my leg, I had phone calls and text messages from everyone at the school telling me that they were praying for me, that their families were praying for me. And just that love and support of knowing that I had literally hundreds of people from my school who were talking to the King of Kings on my behalf was so comforting and brought me so much peace. It was absolutely amazing. And something that I'll definitely take with me as I move on from the school and try to show other people the comfort that these people have given me, and all the prayer and support has been absolutely amazing. Thank you.
Now here's the part where I remind you where you come in on this. Those are just two examples of the young people that we get to affect as the network of adults at Calvary Chapel. There's kids in public school, homeschool, and private school, charter school, that we all have a chance through loving and serving them to affect tomorrow for Jesus Christ. I'd like to read Psalm 127, parts of it again to you. Unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman keeps awake in vain. Guys, we are appointed to be builders and watchmen for the coming up generations. Behold, children are a gift of the Lord. The fruit of the womb is a reward. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. How blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. You here to, with these young people, I wanted to define this to make sure you understood how important this is. You are vital. You are absolutely necessary. You are essential in providing a network of adults around these people as they grow. Don't think for a second that your prayers, your gifts, your offerings, your services that you provide, whether at Calvary Chapel or wherever you are at, don't think that those things you do are anything but short of miraculous. That's the Lord working in you. It's the Lord building the house. That's the Lord setting up watchmen. And like I said, at CCA, I have this unique ability to draw on some young people. But at this moment, if you are, I need some help from some of you. If you are 19 or younger, would you please just stand up really quick? If you guys would just take a second and look, you either have made a difference, or you are making a difference, or you will be making a difference in lives just like these. You are nothing short of miraculous. Do not sell yourself short on what you do. Thank you, guys. You may sit down. Give them a round. Whether you're a parent, or you serve at a school, or you coach a team, or you sponsor a youth event, or you serve in the nursery, or you pray daily, or you just bring that package of copy paper to your school. All of those things work together to support the young people in our church and in our ministries at Calvary Chapel. You are our partners in building up this next generation. You're the Lord's partners. You provide these young people and young people like them in our church a greater opportunity to say yes when the Lord calls in their lives. And at the end of the day, isn't that what it's all about? Saying yes when the Lord calls. You know, and that's what we want to do. And I want to close with a little bit about saying yes to the Lord. Now, if you're out here today and you haven't said that initial yes to Jesus, I want to tell you about my King. He is worthy. He's worthy of your money. He's worthy of your trust. He's worthy of your future. He is worthy of your heart. He is patient. He is forgiving. He is gentle. He is kind. He is courageous. And he is desperately in love with you. He is unstoppable. He is immovable. And he is relentless in his pursuit of you. You can hide with your secrets. You can hide with your lust. You can hide with your fear. And he is still going to chase you down. Say yes to my King. For those of you that are believers, you know what you've been saying no about. I just want to encourage you as your brother and your friend to say yes. I've had some stuff in my life this year where I finally quit saying no, and I've said yes, and I can testify he is faithful. And I don't know what it is, you know. I can't get into your heads and tell you what you're saying no to the Lord about. And thankfully, you can't get into mine. Well, that'd be bad. And I just want to encourage you. The Bible tells us that now is the time to say yes. Today is the day to say yes. I want to encourage you to say yes to whatever you've been saying no to the Lord about. And you young people, The Lord is not done changing the world through people like you. He's not done changing families, churches, communities, governments through people like you. And don't ever think that just because you're not in the Daniel story or the Jeremiah story or the Miriam story that you can't change the world for Jesus Christ. He will use you if you say yes when he calls. Before we go into communion, I want to pray, and then we'll go into communion. Just one more reminder. You are vital. You are vital. These next generation needs you to be in their lives somehow. They need you.